This big tower in the clouds you keep dreaming about. You say these earthquakes we've been having have something to do with it. They happen because the tower is under attack. You're a smart kid, Jake. You know when you can't differentiate between dreams and reality.
It's not a dream, okay? I'm not crazy.
I always see the same thing. The tower, the man in black, the creepy guys with the fake skins.
Welcome to this review of The Dark Tower, part of Percolated Media's Stephen King retrospective series.
It's really gonna happen, isn't it?
Oh, yes it is.
Join Garrett.
Get ready. Tall, dark, and handsome is about to crash the party.
Adam.
His guns are forged from the steel of the sword of Arthur Eld himself.
And Matt.
It's fitting that you and the tower should fall together.
As they continue going through the popular author's cinematic adaptations by reviewing producer Ron Howard's 2017 film version of King's 7-plus volume magnum opus.
It's as if he's
fighting back.
What is everyone's background with this Dark Tower series of books?
We encourage questions. It shows spirit and vitality.
Is the Idris Elba and Matthew McConaughey starring film really the albatross of cinema that reviews would leave you to believe?
It's not me! I'm not doing this!
Or is this movie just a misunderstood fun time?
We lost. Not while the tower still stands. Not while you still stand.
All this and much more coming up, courtesy of Percolated Media.
Alrighty, let's go put everyone out of their misery, shall we?
The Dark Tower, released August 4th, 2017. Budget on this was $66 million. Where is that money? Box office, $113.2 million. And this was directed by Nikolai Arcel. Boys, I'm glad to be back in King Land. You know, we took a set of months off to kind of give Adam a break. We discussed the Hulk. And here we are back in Stephen King Land. Although I have to say, as the King fan, my knowledge of the Dark Tower is not much. I happen to be reading all of his books in publishing order to get ready for these podcasts, and I happen to be on number 4, which I'll get into as we discuss the film a little bit. But if you guys are going to ask me questions about what this film consists of and what's in the books, they take a lot of what's in the later volumes and put it into this movie. So I'm going to be kind of limited. Matt, what is your knowledge of the Dark Tower?
So I read up to the 4th book, I think is where I cut off. And I think there's 8 total, so I only did half of them. And for me, I always knew the Dark Towers, it's King's... If the Stand is his magnum opus, the Dark Tower is his Lord of the Rings. He's literally compared it to that, because It's hyper-fantasy, a lot of different characters, but you have a central one, and you know you have like a Dark Lord, you got... all kinds of stuff with a lot of imagination. I'm sure a lot of which was fueled by drugs. But be that as it may, I also knew this was the property of King's that people wanted to see adapted for the longest time. And it has a fan base that even people who are not like huge horror fans and don't gravitate to most of Stephen King's other work because that's his common association, have a huge reverence for The Dark Tower. And I like those books quite a lot, the ones that I've read. It's been years since I've read them, but my memories of them are pretty favorable. But I also know that the first one, there was a reprint that King did where he made some revisions.
Mm-hmm. Well, only about 15 pages worth.
But still some big changes. Yeah. Nevertheless, that I haven't read the revised version, but I like The Dark Tower. I like how it both differentiates itself from his other work while also being kind of the linchpin that ties certain aspects of his overall career's bibliography together. Through no fault of this movie, it took a long time for it to get into development, and it wasn't for lack of trying.
Yep, there was a lot of trying. But before I get to that, Adam, you mentioned your knowledge of The Dark Tower is actually more than most of King's properties, because you actually, did you say you read some of his comics, or you know of the Marvel comics that they released in conjunction to The Dark Tower?
So I read quite a while ago that first graphic novel that they had put out. I believe I got it in collected edition. So The Gunslinger, was that the first one?
Yes.
So I remember getting that. I remember looking at the cover being like, oh, that's pretty cool. And I bought the collected edition, read through it, thought it was pretty cool. I remember nothing about it. But I remember that I read it. I remember I bought the book. And I remember I read about 3 chapters. And I have it somewhere. So, and that's about my memory of it at this point. I went through it, so I remember more some visual stuff as opposed to anything else. And I can't say that I loved it or hate it because I really don't remember. But people were just like, you like fantasy, you like that kind of stuff, you may like this. And from what I kind of remember decades ago, I did. But I can't tell you much other than the look of the graphic novel, which was pretty cool, but is not what this movie is.
Well, Matt said something I kind of want to piggyback on, and that the Dark Tower is kind of the linchpin of King's work. And I would go as far as to say it's actually the nexus of King's work. I truly believe there are references to the Dark Tower in so many different works of his. Going everywhere from The Mist, you know, when we get to the film adaptation of The Mist, the very beginning has the Thomas Jane character painting a painting of the Gunslinger. And there are references in a book I finished of his called Insomnia, which is, I am so glad nobody has adapted that book, because man, next to Doctor Sleep, it might be the worst thing he's ever written. But there is the Dark Tower in that. The Dark Tower goes in a lot of different of his works.
Yeah, I know that, like, everything from the Mist to It to even some of his more understated stuff has components of the, like, Eye of the Dragon is tied into the Dark Tower with one of the characters. So, Nexus is a good example of a word to use to describe it.
And to get into just how big of a reach the Dark Tower does have, I'll tell a little bit of a story. So, every summer, me and Jen like to go out to the pool in our complex to go swimming, and we bring books and we read by the pool. And at this time, I think it was last year, maybe the year before, I was reading The Drawing of the Three, which is the second book of this series. We'll read for a bit, and then we look at each other, it's like, you want to do a couple laps? Okay, let's jump in and do a couple laps. Now, in the midst of doing that last year, there was a couple sitting right across the pool from us. And as I'm reading, me and Jen are like, you want to go? Okay, let's go. So we put our books down and we went for a couple laps. And as I'm getting out on this gentleman's side, he stops me. He goes, just to let you know, you are reading my favorite fantasy series ever. And he goes, I am not a Stephen King fan, but I love The Dark Tower. And I go through it at least once every couple years. And if nothing else, he has created something like Lord of the Rings that has that reach, that reaches certain people.
From what I understand, that's about true. And I'm glad for that. I mean, look, he's known as the King of Horror, you know, in books for a reason. But beyond that, I think some of his most successful works are more drama. And then you got something like The Dark Tower, which really hits a fantasy type of niche. So good for him that he's got an outreach that is going different directions.
Yeah, I like that he's, for someone who's well known as sort of the master of one genre, that he could pull in an audience that looks at his name and only associates it with one thing. It makes them become fans. It's also fantasy. A lot of his horror is steeped in fantasy and the fantastical and the supernatural, but it's not the reversal with The Dark Tower, where there's some horror aspects in them, depending on the book. Mm-hmm. But in large, they are, like, I would classify them as fantasy first and foremost. Like, it's not one of those things to where it's, well, you could argue it's both, like how people argue about Silence of the Lambs. No, they're hyper-stylized fantasy, and they embrace the outlandishness. They get very weird, very abstract. There's some, I've always said, like, the director I wish that I would associate with The Dark Tower. Now, I don't think he would have done it because of Dune. Like, I see a lot of David Lynch in some of what King is doing in The Dark Tower with the books I've read. Maybe they go with the back four that I haven't read. Maybe they don't. But some of the concepts I could totally see someone like David Lynch running with. Or Terry Gilliam would be another one I would think of.
Yeah, Terry Gilliam's definitely the one that came to mind. Before I get to all the attempts to adapt this thing, because we ran the Nexus with Hulk a couple weeks ago. that doesn't have quite as much backstory, but it has a bit of it. I do want to get to kind of the origin of the Dark Tower, and it goes all the way back to when King was 19 years old. He knew he wanted to be an author. He knew he wanted to write for a living, and he had a real big case of writer's block around this time, and he was trying his best to get his name out there, you know, selling his stuff to different kinds of magazines and things around this time, and he was really, really stuck. But he wrote down one line that he would build upon in the decades that followed, and that line is, "The man in black fled across the desert, and the gunslinger followed." He wrote the first book. It was in 1982 that it was released. The first book is more of a stripped-down Western. There are elements of horror in it, but there's a shootout in it. There's an abortion with a gun. Yes, that is in this book. It was a pretty shocking scene when I reread it. There are a whole bunch of different things in that. And then The Drawing of the Three kind of jumps into the fantasy realm. And we get the addition of two extra characters. And then book three, we continue with that with more stakes involved in that. Now I'm on book four. And book four, I'm only 100 pages into it, boys. But at the time I have stopped, they have just gone to a place where the Captain Tripp's flu has gone and taken out the country. So we are integrating The Stand along with it as well at this point. And that is where I have stopped. All right, so let's get to the movie. In 2007, Stephen King was a huge fan of Lost. So he went...
Which makes sense because he didn't remember writing some of his books because of cocaine. So that he saw that title and went, oh, that's perfect for me.
He went and sought out the people behind that show, J.J. Abrams and Damon Lindelof. Now, this is legend, but I would believe it if I know King. They were able to obtain the rights for $19. And anyone who knows The Dark Tower knows 19 plays a huge part in The Dark Tower. And 19, the number 19, if you read his works too, comes up in a lot of his works. So $19 is what they got the rights for. And they were developing it all the way through 2010. And what Lindelof has said is they could not figure out how to handle the Jake character, the boy character that we're going to see in this movie. There were times when they were going to do a set of movies, and then when he finished the eighth novel, which is actually a mini story between three and four, they decided, you know what, I think we're done with this. And just to kind of go back to the publishing of The Dark Tower 2, so King releases those other two volumes. The third volume comes out in 91, and then he waits about 6 years and releases number four. And he says that, look, I'm going to finish it. But he wants to elongate it like that throughout the rest of his career. But what happens is, and we'll get to this when we get to Dreamcatcher, but there's a little bit of a car accident in 1999. And when he recovered from that, fully recovered, he decided, you know what? This is my impetus. I'm going to finish the series. So he jumps into Overload and he releases the last three volumes in pretty big succession order. In fact, I'm looking at them right now on my shelf. And yeah, 5, 6, and 7. Are all back to back to back. Then he does The Wind Behind the Keyhole, which is the eighth volume that, like I said, is between 3 and 4. And it was around this time that Abrams and Lindelof, they just couldn't figure out how to approach it. So what happens? Ron Howard obtains the rights in 2010. And he gets Akiva Goldsman to write the script. And Howard's going to be producing with Brian Grazer. And Howard was going to direct it. But as much as they were going through the script, they, again, just could not figure out how to approach this. Matt, were you following any of this at this time?
Yeah, I was following once Ron Howard got involved. I knew Abrams had taken a stab at it after the fact. I don't understand getting Ron Howard considering how bad those Da Vinci Code movies are. Now, granted, I don't think those books are anywhere near as good as The Dark Tower. And then why would you get Akiva Goldsman? That, to me, was the kiss of death for all things being as they were. Because that man should have had his WGA card revoked after Batman and Robin. And I don't know how he won an Oscar for Beautiful Mind.
I was going to say, he's an Oscar winner.
Yeah, I don't know how. But look, Cuba Gooding Jr. won an Oscar. So let's not act like it's a symbol of a true symbol of career longevity or quality. Yeah, I always said if you were going to do this, it had to be a TV show. I thought it was the most logical because the books are so expansive. But then the counter is Lord of the Rings did all three movies. And he shot them all at the same time. He was shooting different movies at different times in a 14-month span. So if Peter Jackson, of all people, can do that, you don't really have an excuse for not figuring out how to crack The Dark Tower. Especially since Universal gave you the runway to do three films. And then they were going to alternate with two seasons of a television show mm-hmm. to sort of like fill in the gaps.
Yep.
Yeah. That would have been... I could have seen that. Like you kind of do both, but then you have to basically force people to get the complete experience because not everyone was watching television mm-hmm. or taking it as seriously as they do now. Like it would have been like the Marvel thing before that. So I don't know if it fully would have worked in that pitch.
In fact, they did do a pilot for the TV show that Glenn Mazzara, who worked a lot on The Walking Dead, was a big part of. And there is a big interview with him about just that pilot, but guess what? They say in the beginning of that interview that there are spoilers galore in this interview that spoil a lot of what happens later on in The Dark Tower. So I did not listen to that interview for this podcast, but I'd be interested to see. It has not been quote-unquote leaked, but it has been finished, that pilot. I'd be interested to see what they could do with that. Now, Ron Howard, again, was slated to direct this, and then he had a lot of enthusiasm for the project. He really wanted to do it, but again, they just could not figure out how, and by that time, Ron Howard had kind of moved on to other things. So they get this Nikolai Arcel. Now, I'm not too familiar with Nikolai Arcel's work. I do know he worked on The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. He wrote that original movie, but he had also been nominated for an Oscar at this time for a movie called A Royal Affair, which starred Mads Mikkelsen and Alicia Vikander. It made a pretty big splash. But Matt, do you get Nikolai Arcel to do your big epic Dark Tower film? Where's the thinking in that?
Well, would you think Peter Jackson was the guy to do Lord of the Rings? Sometimes you never know until it actually happens. But if you're trying to like instill confidence in people, to the large portion, especially the devotees who wanted to see this for the longest time, I don't think his announcement of directing this inspired a lot of confidence, especially because we had already, years before that, before Ron Howard left, we knew his casting choices. There was a point where Javier Bardem was going to play Roland. Russell Crowe was talked about because of the Ron Howard connection, both of which I could have seen. There was a rumor about Liam Neeson. So when it finally, that portion died, I said, I'll believe this one when I see it. Like I for the longest time, didn't think that was actually going to happen.
When you make a film and then you can tell that based on that, you get a second one and then pretty much never get to do another one. It couldn't have been good. I didn't recognize the director's name. Looking it up, I'm like, okay, saw that one. And that's about it. But if this works, the guy's got a different career. Instead, this thing has got all of the interference and problems that it had, and he's a footnote.
Yep, he was pretty much run out of Hollywood after this. So getting back to the making. So in November 2015, Matthew McConaughey was cast as the Man in Black.
Which everybody endorsed.
Endorsed that. In fact, I wanted him to be, this is a spoiler for the book series, but the Man in Black is eventually revealed to be Randall Flagg in that Dark Tower series. I would have loved, loved to have seen McConaughey in that Stand debacle that we reviewed last year.
Well, yeah, he was offered the 2020 miniseries. Yep. He turned it down. I wonder if because of this. Because we were still in this was still the McConaughey. He had really shown, like, taking daring projects and great performance after great performance. And this was, I think, to get the fans on board. It was almost like they pitched to McConaughey. It's like, we need you to get people to buy into this, that it's actually going to be good.
All right, Adam, McConaughey, cast as Man in Black. Going in, you knew that about that casting, right?
Excited.
Yeah.
Thought it was absolutely a good choice. I was really excited about that part of it. I was like, that's the way to go. And speaking about The Stand and Randall Flagg and all that kind of stuff, I think, being that we've discussed 2020's The Stand miniseries, I think you could look at the two and put them side by side. Because I think demeanor and even dress, they're pretty damn similar. I think Skarsgård got a lot of his Man in Black from this Man in Black.
Boy, I wish you could have switched them, but we'll get there. All right, and then in January 2016, it's announced that Idris Elba was cast as the Gunslinger, a.k.a. Roland Deschain. And wouldn't you know it, fans just came out and said, the Gunslinger's not black, which King came out and just threw a fire extinguisher on those flames pretty quick, and people finally shut up about it. But that was a big thing leading up to it. Matt, we have Idris Elba as the Gunslinger. What'd you think?
Again, another great choice. I don't give a shit about race, especially with a character where that's irrelevant. I could see a world where they switched roles and it would have worked also, but you could not cast Idris Elba as a character named the Man in Black. People would have.
Nope.
What's he going to do, close his eyes so you can't see him? It would have been a PR nightmare, but I think you could have interchanged them both, and I would have supported either, because I could totally see Matthew McConaughey as a Western gunslinger, especially around this time.
Yep.
But, you know, again, this, as much as I love Idris Elba, though, he made a lot of garbage with some of his movie choices, so I couldn't 100% be on board, although I think if you were doing fan casting with people who know how to look at things beyond just being triggered. I don't know anyone who hated either of these choices.
I was excited for it.
Such a good casting choice. Yeah. So into Idris. Fucking chef's kiss.
Yeah,
you could not have cast your main two better.
We reviewed him in the past, and we've always said the same thing. We've said, I think he is a good choice for the right role, and I don't think he's found that role yet. Is it the Gunslinger? We'll discuss it, but
he is a nerd that loves to work. He did a movie about being a DJ. Why? because he DJs. He goes out on the weekend and actually DJs EDM because he loves the music. So he made a movie about it because he wanted to.
So the castings are announced, and people, as Matt said, people were, I don't know if excited, but I, as a King fan, really endorsed those choices. And then they started filming the movie, and then stuff started coming out that, well, we're having reshoots being done. And this thing went through a lot of different reshoots. It went through the editing bay a bunch. King was coming out, trying to do some PR for it, saying, I'm still confident that it's going to come out okay. And they did pump up the PR machine a bit. You saw some cool posters. I love seeing the Dark Tower amidst Elba and McConaughey in the background. Like this was some cool stuff coming up. And plus, we were right on the cusp, I should say, of the Kingissance coming. Because in a couple months after this, we would have the release of It.
It was 1 month.
1 month, yeah. But this comes out, kind of dies a pretty slow, painful death. And I have to say, bad PR for this did not get me to theaters to see this. And I mentioned this when we talked about The Golden Circle last year, Kingsman, that 2017 was a really bad year for me. I was barely able to get out to the movies that year because of a lot of stuff going on in my life. And I could not get out to see this. I couldn't get to a screening of it. As excited as I was, I just did not get to theaters to see it. Matt, did you see this in theaters?
Yeah, it was like a Black Friday sale because it came and went within 48 hours. Like this thing did not have a long shelf life in the theaters. And the death sentence to me, at least for my small morsel of optimism, was the multiple pushbacks. And then they said August, which is I was thinking of Suicide Squad the year before. That's where I because honestly, based on the production history and all the reshoots and stuff, that's the movie I thought of.
Yeah, that's a pretty good comparison. Adam, as much of a non-King fan as you are, did you hear about the PR stuff going on? Did you hear about the reshoots and all that?
I was just remember hearing that nobody was happy with it. It had problems. It kept getting moved. And to Matt's point, when it came finally time to see it, I took a long nap and missed the time that it had spent in the theaters that weekend. This thing had the longevity back then that The Bride had this year. 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
2 weeks.
So I waited till this was released on DVD. Adam, obviously, this is your first viewing of this, correct?
Nope. I'd seen this once before.
Had you really?
Yep, because Redbox was a dollar. So I had seen this once before because I was like, yeah, how bad could it be? Dollar baby. I love Idris Elba, and Luther's freaking awesome.
Luther's the best. We went through that earlier this year. What a great show that is.
The movie sucked.
No, that movie was terrible. Holy shit. I cannot believe how bad
No, there is no movie. There's a TV series.
By the time this was out, three of us had started our own thing. That was when I picked up this Blu-ray, and I knew we were going to get to it eventually. I held off on it. I did watch it initially when it was out. It might have been on HBO or something one night. I waited a bit for this because another reason why is because I hadn't gone through the books at all at that time. And I apologize, folks. Again, I am only 100 pages into book 4, Wizards and Glass. If there's things that I'm missing when we get to this movie, because I know that they take a lot from the later books, I'm sorry. But I'll probably give an epididymal when I get through those other books, when I eventually get through them. You know, when I mentioned to my father-in-law, because my father-in-law is also a big fan of The Dark Tower, when I mentioned to him, I'm like, yeah, I'm going through Kings in publication order, because I think I had brought the third volume out there. And he's like, oh, you're going through The Dark Tower? I said, yeah, I'm going through King's stuff in publication order. He goes, oh, God, if you're going through The Dark Tower, you got to go to 4, like, immediately. You can't read those that way. I said, this is the way I'm going to do it. So, yeah, he's a big fan of these as well. All right, with all that out of the way, boys, oh, boy, what a plot we got going here. So we open up with my favorite thing, text.
Always a good sign.
Oh, God, right away I'm sitting there going, oh no.
Explaining that there's a tower that stands at the center of the universe protecting us from darkness, and it is said that the mind of a child can bring it down as the title fills the screen. Oh boy, is this the kiss of death or what, Adam?
Yep. Now, you could have done this a little different. You could have shown the tower and had somebody maybe do narration, which would have been a little less bad, maybe, but just some text on screen, but then also what the words are. Like, how do you not start this with The Man in Black fled across the desert and the gunslinger followed. Like, that's, if you're going to put up text, that's what you make it that opening line of the book.
Well, there's a big reason why, but go ahead.
Yeah. But instead, I hear this, but then my brain just goes, the never ending story. Oh, man, you lost me 5 seconds into a movie.
Why is that reason, Matt? I know they say it later in a really clumsy ass way, but
why? No, my reason is like why it doesn't work is that the movie's not about them.
No, it's not. Yeah, and I understand that.
But that's the biggest sin this movie commits, yeah. Of which there is a Ten Commandments scroll of things wrong with this as an adaptation, independent of what it's adapting, but how it's adapted.
Okay, so we're going to get into this now?
Go ahead. But the text, fantasy is almost the one genre you can get away with exposition as narration, because you have the excuse of you need to establish the world that these characters inhabit and where they come from. So you almost get a pass to do that if it's in the first like 10, 15 minutes. But no, it throws you right in and it acts like, hey, you know this, which makes it more insulting, I think, if you're a fan of the material, because they're not doing anything to really satisfy you, because they're not, it's not a great adaptation at the start. And if you're a newbie, it's so dumbed down for a lot of it that you're sitting there going, these are the books that everyone's going apeshit over. Why would I read these?
You cannot episode four this and just throw your audience in the middle of it with how vast this universe is. Hell, I hear in one of these volumes, Stephen King himself shows up. Like, that's how crazy these books get. And you're asking a lot out of your audience right away by throwing them in the midst of this with this text. And when you said the biggest sin, here's what I thought you were going to say, Matt. The biggest sin this movie commits is we are going from the point of view of Jake and not the point of view of the gunslinger. By doing that, you are making it into a young adult film, and that is where I'm already like pissed off.
Well, that is, I was going to wait till we introduced to Jake, but that is, I think perspective is the biggest damnation you can throw at this as an adaptation. Jake is a character in the first book, but he is the supporting character, and not to spoil the book, but he is sacrificed in the last part of that book.
Yeah, he dies.
He feels terrible about it, but he has to do what he has to do. But this feels you mentioned YA. This feels like all the movies that tried to be Harry Potter, but failed. You know, I think of The Seeker, Aragon. Yeah, well, Maze Runner at least got multiple movies. But like all the one-offs, like Aragon, The Seeker, The Host. I guess if you want to go to the multiple ones, this feels very Divergent-esque.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, I think making this about Jake and not the gunslinger as a fan, I think is why I dislike it as much as I do. On top of being a fan of what I've read, but it's also like studio thing of, well, we need to make this accessible. It's the 80s thing. Let's have a kid be the center point, which they did with, because that worked so well for the Garbage Pail Kids. And look, this is not as bad as that, because there's at least competency on display here. But oh my God, everything from the foundation up is a mistake.
So we're seeing some children play. We just got through the opening scroll. We're seeing some children play on some sort of grassy playground as an alarm goes off and they all head to the same place. And then we're seeing some creepy makeup as we cut to the inside of a set of experiments and a kid forms enough of a mind blast to fill the skies. Adam, what are you thinking at this point? I'm going to go to you a lot in this because I am very curious.
What the hell? Did I skip to chapter 10? Did I hit fast forward and I don't know it? How do you think that you could just have this happen and think you're going to give an explanation later? This is weird. And what? This isn't shot very good. This set that they have with these kids strapped into these things look fucking low budget that it might as well be on the UPN. What? What? No. And then, that we're doing this with these kids. I mean, we're not torturing the kids, so they're not big bad. This feels like it's going to be a Sesame Street episode at the end of it. The kids are going to rise up and take control. Oh, my God. I'm eye-rolling so far, just like right off the bat.
Well, it throws you in without giving you any sort of like lifesaver to grab onto or establishing point, because it tricks you into thinking it's our world.
Yeah.
Because they make you think like it's on a schoolyard, everyone's all happy. I was thinking of the freaking Terminator 2 sequence. And then you see like it's clearly not our world because you got the people with the faces. And it's also dumb because you've already established that this is an alternate world with your text. So why are you then trying to pull the rug? And they pull the rug multiple times in the first 2-3 minutes. And right away I'm like, okay, this is not in good hands. Which is unfortunate because we have an Allstate person in this movie. And this, because this, if you're a fan, you're not in good hands.
We see another kid named Jake waking up as his mom offers him breakfast, and we're seeing that the earthquakes and blasts are plastered all over the news as Jake's mom reminds him to see Dr. Hotchkiss after school. We see Timmy stopping by, and Jake's stepdad chastises his mom for wasting all that money on shrinks.
Yep, because it's a Stephen King property. We got the abusive stepdad.
Well, Arcel himself has come out and said, well, in the lead up to this, did come out and say that he was a big King fan. So he wanted to put as much of those tropes in as he could. He put a lot of Easter eggs of King's in this. If you notice, we have Pennywise's circus later on. We're going to see a lot of this stuff. And by the way, King litters his books with this stuff as well. So I guess he's going for something. We see that Jake has been making some drawings of some sort of apocalypse, those of which are being picked on by some bully, and he is dragged away from a fight. And if there's anything I can say, Matt, is that you love bullies in these movies, don't
Not
you?
Not just any bully. It's the same kid that played Henry Bowers
yes!
a month later.
Oh,
they
wow.
just grab him off that set. Like, I couldn't fucking believe this.
We cut to the shrink session, and Jake is explaining what his drawings of the towers are about, and that it is not a dream, it is of darkness and fire. All right, let me get this out there. I mentioned that that first book is a stripped-down Western, pretty much, with a few supernatural things here and there thrown in. Matt, why do you go for the huge special effects fest for your opening movie when you have such a stripped-down, inexpensive book to adapt, and then you take it from there in the TV adaptations that they were planning?
Yeah, it's an odd, all the decision, it's like every decision they make in this movie is the wrong one from a creative standpoint. And it also doesn't help that your main character is boring, milquetoast, you yeah. know, kid. He's so much of an avatar that he should be played by Sam Worthington because he's not interesting at all. And the kid is also not a great actor. This is not a Daniel Radcliffe situation. Or even a Logan Lerman like Percy Jackson, you know, the knockoff. But I don't think he's very good. It's all just distracting the fact that he went through puberty during this production.
Yeah.
Because towards the end of this movie, he's like 3-4 inches taller.
Because of those reshoots. Yeah.
it's really annoying.
One, I'm completely... Okay, first of all, I spend so much time going, where do I know his mom from? Where do I know his mom from?
Failure to Launch, speaking of Matthew McConaughey.
She is one of the best episodes of House that they ever did.
Oh, that's right. That's where I saw her.
One of those emotional ones that is just like she's an assault victim that House has to somehow get empathy. Oh, amazing episode. Hey, we got bullet. Like, I can't believe we start going off a check mark of King.
Yeah.
Check, check, check. Check. I think we're going to get something different. I think we're going to get something fantastical. And now I remember not hating this the first time I watched it. Guess what? That feeling is out the window.
Are you going to Hulk out? Oh, wait, that was a couple weeks ago.
I just can't believe how bad, you know, because I remember just going, okay, I could run along with it. No, this thing is really shittily written. Oh, God.
Well, you know what it is?
The ending is worse.
You know what it is? It's the fact that we have gone through these adaptations one by one. So you have a little bit of an education on what to expect as far as adaptations go. But with this, like, they go so far off the beaten path that I don't know what this is an adaptation of.
Well, that's the other thing. They called this, so there's elements of the first book, the fourth book, and there's also, like, they're saying it's a sequel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I haven't read it, but the seventh book apparently reveals that Roland and the Man in Black are caught in, like, an endless cycle of resurrection.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, this is just another cycle, basically. It's kind of like, it basically does what The Matrix 2 reveals. It's basically that conceit. I haven't read it, but from my knowledge, that's what it is.
So Jake is asked about his real dad dying, and there's another earthquake. We then see Jake having people tell him that they've seen kids like him before as he gets on a bus. And then Jake is overhearing an argument with his parents as his mom chastises his stepdad for not acting like Jake is his real kid. And his mom says there's a clinic she would recommend Jake attend that is science-based.
She slips over an X-Men comic. But well, the problem also, like, because this movie's 95 minutes, it is paced at a level that The Flash couldn't outrun. And because of that, there is no depth, there's no discovery, because when Jake realizes that, like, you know, the people are out to get him, it's so obvious. He catches it right away. They're making no attempts at subtlety of hiding. You got the freaking homeless guy saying they're coming to get you, Barbara. It's so poorly done. Like, there's no surprise. There's no... And because of that, there's also no suspense.
Yeah. I am so glad you brought this up, because the three of us have all been guilty of it, of looking at a movie and saying, God damn, this is 2+ hours. Why do they give this much room to breathe? Guess what? This movie needed room to breathe, and you're making this 90 minutes, a 7-volume adaptation? This is the exact opposite of Children of the Corn, where you had like a 20-page short story expanded into 13 movies. This is ridiculous. Because and Matt, you're absolutely right. We're going from scene to scene to scene without being able to take in anything. And when exposition is delivered, oh my God, is it lazily done.
Yeah, I feel like I'm taking it in a way that I don't want to. Jeez. This thing is just, God dang. I can't believe that I'm going to say I wish I had more of this, because I don't want more of this movie, but it doesn't give it time to explain anything.
Like, I mean, could you imagine if the Sorcerer's Stone was made like this?
Oh my God.
This thing literally goes from, hey, we called the clinic, to the clinic is here to pick you up.
Timmy tells Jake to stop staring at his drawings as Jake again starts missing his father. He lays down for just one night of sleep as he's having visions of the man in black saying he has nothing to be afraid of as he burns someone to death. Again, from the point of view of this kid, just a bad decision. Bad decision. This has to be from Roland's point of view, not this fucking kid. And I like Jake in the books. I actually really do like Jake in the books. And yes, he does die in the first book, but he's resurrected a couple books later. Like, I like everything that has to do with him in those books. And I'm not even going to go as far as Matt is to say this kid's bad. I don't think he's bad. I just think the way he is inserted in this story is terrible.
Well, for a movie that's telling us there's something special about him that none of the other kids can replicate, I don't get that out of his performance or his characterization.
But he has the shine, Matt. He has the shine.
Well, oh God, save that.
Okay, oh God, I'm saving it.
I'm sure Adam had a conniption when they said that one.
So we see Roland. He's getting advice from Walter that they haven't lost as long as the tower still stands. And they point their guns as Roland says he kills with his heart and Walter is somehow put to death by the man in black. So we have like a Serrano freaking cameo for like 2 minutes to play. I like seeing
Dennis Haysbert showing up. This thing is, okay, I haven't used this in a couple weeks, so I get to bring it back. A Cuisinart would be a better editor for whatever they use for this thing, because it cuts and we're in this place that we don't know, and they're just back to back, and they've got this weird scene with Dennis Haysbert and Idris Elba, and I'm sorry, but putting two black people together doesn't mean that one of them looks old enough to be the father. But to have the man in black, Walter, whatever they decide to calling him based on who knows him, to walk up and just like stop breathing. He has so much power that he's almost not a threat, because he's not threatening. He just whispers away whatever he needs to have done. It affects anybody but Roland, yada yada. McConaughey's got amazing presence. Like, it's, I love what he's bringing, but by keeping it downplayed, the menace is understated, but this movie's not long enough to get involved in it. And then this, even this part is such lip service and such surface level crap with the man in black and his father that it's you could tell that they took lines from the book that they thought looked cool on a page and tried to make matter, but they don't have the time to make them matter.
Yeah, well, he's also so tremendously powerful, but they never explain how Roland is able to resist everything.
Right.
Like, he just says, oh, he's resistant to my magic when he's talking to his minions, but they don't give a clear explanation, which makes it, like, for these two characters that we're supposed to be told are, routinely are told, they're special and they're unique. Okay, why? Like, don't dangle the cheese in front of me and then, you know, yank it up and say you got to be quicker than that, which is the opposite message the editor should have taken, because this movie has no time to breathe. I feel like when he says stop breathing, he should have told that to the editors. And as far as McConaughey, I think he's pretty bad in this.
I do too.
It's not that he's not trying. It's that he's not trying enough. I feel like they just thought, and look, to Idris's defense as well, I don't think either of them were directed whatsoever. Like, this clearly feels like a production where these people had no clue what to do, but tremendous disappointment. You got the two right guys, and they're not being told how to properly bring these characters to life.
I like Idris a hell of a lot more than I like McConaughey in this. And
McConaughey's got one really good scene where I see, like, what this, the potential, but he's kind of sleepwalking through a lot of this.
He is, but when you take this character and give him force powers, Sith powers,
Like, yeah, that, why is he he's Palpatine at the end of this?
Yeah, there's no development of that in the books. This is brought in for the movie. You know why they do that to him in this movie? Because we need to give them a reason to have a big shootout at the end of this thing. And the only reason to do that is to make McConaughey as powerful as he is here. He's not this in those books. I hate that they took this character the way he did. I think he's trying to bring back what he did in Texas Chainsaw 4 way back when in 1994. Like, that's what I thought of when I was watching this.
That's the opposite. He's too big in that.
He's big in this. When he's making those eggs later on, like...
No, but that's the one scene I was saying.
Oh, that's a horrible scene, Goudreau. That's a horrible scene.
I think that's hysterical.
Oh, get out of my face with that. Adam, what do you think about McConaughey in this?
I think he's fine because I think it was a long-term plan. I don't think you got him here just to do this. I do think they were going to reveal his character being the Man in Black, being Rick Flagg. I think there was a long-term goal, and that's why he's doing it this way. But look, those are the two people that I want to watch in this film. There is nobody else I want to see in this film, and everybody else is freaking forgettable.
Well, the problem is also at the end of the first book, he reveals that he serves another master. Like, the Crimson King is like the Sauron of the Dark Tower. Like, he's the big villain. Think of the Man in Black as Saruman, except he gets a better ending than Saruman because they actually show it. But the problem also is one of the other reveals in the first book is that there's this wizard character that Roland is familiar with that tricked him into doing the gunslinger test earlier than he should have, but he passed. And it's revealed that that wizard and the Man in Black are the same character. So there's a lot of like details that are missing. Because they talk about, oh, he has many names and all that, but they don't give you this movie doesn't give you the why. I feel like they went to a freaking alphabet store and picked out all the letters except for the one why.
So the Man in Black says that the tower will fall. Meanwhile, Jake is showing Timmy his drawings of the gunslinger, and he goes and searches for him through his laptop, and this is when his stepdad says to come down to dinner for his mom. Laurie then says that Toby is here to take him to the clinic, and Jake sees a mark on his neck, and he tells his mom that Toby is one of the skin people from his dream, and he won't go. And again, if this is something from those books, I haven't gotten to it yet, so I have no idea where this is coming from. His stepdad threatens him again, and his mom promises that if he doesn't like it at the clinic, she will go down and pick him up herself. I think they're trying something with Jake and his mom here. I think the mom is actually pretty good. I like her in this. They're trying something, but as we've mentioned, it doesn't have any room to breathe.
No. There's no time, but the mom's got one note that she kind of plays. The stepfather being in it as long as he is ends up being problem. Like, he's not even needed, other than it's Stephen King. You know, you could really just have Jake and his mom, and I think that would be enough, and you could have a better relationship there. Did they remember that V just had a resurgence before this movie, so we had to have these lizard people?
I was thinking of that.
Yeah,
actually, V is something on my mind. Which, speaking of JJ, by this point, I realize the movie's not. It's not for me, and quite frankly, I don't think it's for anybody, and I'm just waiting to see if it's going to keep going downhill. Because I've already realized that they've missed the whole, like, it's not an adaptation of that first book as I initially thought it would be, and it's not even a good, because there's been movies where they've adapted, like, multiple books in one shot. Some are kind of escaping me. And to his point, yeah, the stepfather should not be here. The dad should just be dead, and she's a single mom struggling with a kid who's clearly got issues. But this kid apparently watched Casino Royale because he knows parkour.
Well, let's get there. So Jake goes to the bathroom, not to get his toothbrush, but to exit the house. The chase is on as the guy chasing him gets his neck stuck on some razor wire. Ow. And Jake heads down the street and hides. We see him walking the streets with a drawing of a house in his hand as his mom calls, and he just tells her that he will see her later.
Oh, we also get, before this, we had one of the dumbest things. He goes on like Reddit or whatever. It's whereisthis.com.
Yeah.
It says, hey, what's this building? And I love how they got the one internet troll said, up your butt. That made me chuckle because that is a Reddit comment, but I couldn't believe they were that lazy. To come up with a device to explain how he knows where this thing is when he has psychic visions, and that's how you can fucking explain it.
Jake goes to the house and starts exploring as he sees a message that greets the traveler. He enters a code and is sent a portal to Midworld.
It's just like kid walks into this random dilapidated place. There's a portal on the wall with a keypad, because I guess so. And then he just, dude, all of this is just, wait, what? If I play it slower with closed captioning, will it make any sense? No. Nope. Things happen because things have to happen.
And making them like these energy surrounded portals is not how it is. I know it is trivial to put and low key to put doors here, which is how they get from place to place in those books. But to make them like these big ass fucking electric fucking gamma ray infested, to go back to the last retrospective we did, machines is a terrible idea. Again, just a one of a very long line of terrible ideas.
Well, it's the great mission statement of the movie that we're just going to dumb this down as much as we can and dilute it to where it loses all uniqueness. Like, this is these port, like, he might as well put on a sling ring,
yeah,
and create portals.
Yeah, it's so, yeah, pretty
like, because that's what this is. It is the Doctor Strange way of like teleporting dimensions, which had just come out like a year before this. And then the movie also doesn't explain, I mean, like, this movie doesn't explain shit, which should be the subtitle of the movie, but the house just comes to life and attacks him.
Yeah.
If you're an unfamiliar, which a lot of people are, they're going to laugh their asses off watching this, and that's not the movie's intent.
That's me raising my hand, pointing at myself.
Because Monster House came out in 2006 and was animated.
I remember when I was working at 20th Century Fox, I was friends with a producer, and we went to a screening of the Fantastic Four when it was released, and one of the jokes in it got three people laughing. It was an Easter egg, and everybody else just kind of sat silent. And the producer looked at me and said, "We have a bad film here." I'm like, "Why?" He goes, "When you have only three people amongst this huge crowd responding to that, that means you have alienated the rest of your audience." And I think that's exactly what they've done with this film. They have alienated everybody who has not done such a deep dive on all seven and a half of those books. And by the way, the ones who have read those books are not satisfied either. So who are you playing to here?
And also, some of the references are so blinking you miss it.
Yeah.
Oh, God. And some of them are also so in your face that they might as well put on a glove finger by finger and slap you with it.
Yeah.
1408. Ev and I got that one.
You got that one, huh? I was wondering if you got that one.
That's one of the better ones.
I agree.
It's in the background. There's one. Can I say the worst one right now?
Go for it.
The fucking Rita Hayworth poster.
Oh, that's... I didn't mind that too much, especially considering we're going to be talking about that next week. But yeah. I didn't mind that.
That's connected, but it's just not... That's just you trying to suck up the king.
So Jake's prevented from going in by lifting wood planks and then dropped off before he gets up and leaps in.
Yeah, he winds up in New Mexico. Like this other world doesn't even look that alien or unique. Like, it's, he just goes into a world that looks like every dystopian nuclear fallout place that you see in these type of films. Like, it looks like the set of Neil Marshall's Doomsday.
Wow. Doomsday reference. He observes his deserted surroundings, which includes a sandstorm, which, by the way, that was a real sandstorm that came in while they were filming this thing. I wish they could have taken all of it out, but here we are. We see the man in black return to find out that his control room was for him, and he's told about some unauthorized traveling that's taken place.
Yes, yeah, so now we got the freaking TVA involved.
We cut back.
Which, this is also not how he operates in the book.
No.
Like, he doesn't have this, like, okay, first of all, this whole set is the Wachowskis should sue, because this is the fucking this is the resistance from the Matrix.
Absolutely. We cut back to Jake, who finds a canteen of water. He starts drinking it until he's found by Roland. He tells Roland he's had dreams about him as he holds out the drawings that he's made of him.
And a lot of other people in the movie went, "I've dreamed of Idris Elba too."
Yeah, one of them's on this podcast that you just talked.
One of them is engaged to another member of this podcast. You know, this relationship in those books, I have been really into the Roland-Jake relationship. And I think they try for something here. But I don't know. It's like anything else, right, Matt? It's not really established that well.
No, it's every, like, version you see of the reluctant hero having to take along the young tagalong that eventually becomes his pupil. How many times have we seen, like, the bitter old mentor in these young adult books? Like, that was a trope in and of itself.
Mm-hmm. I do, because I think this could be a great relationship if you simplify this, make it True Grit. Do that. You could make something really cool with these two, but you don't.
And you also have the easiest thing to compare them with. They both lost their fathers, and that's what they bond over. You have the lowest hanging fruit possible, and they couldn't even grab it because they have the... If intellect and characterization were height, these writers would be midgets.
Wow. Roland says that there are no gunslingers anymore, as Jake says he's come a long way to find him. And here's something that's just completely unearned. Doesn't Jake, like, become a gunslinger or something by the end of the... Like,
Yeah, although there's a moment in this movie where Idris Elba becomes Batman, and it's that moment when Batman finds orphan kids that have lost their last parent, and he indoctrinates them into his war on terror, because as soon as the mom dies, he's like, I'm taking you under my wing.
Jake mentions the man in black as Roland grabs him and holds Jake over a cliff, and he asks Jake where the man in black is hiding. Jake says he just saw the man in black in his dreams, just like he saw the gunslinger. He says he first started seeing the man in black a year ago, and Roland looks out and just says, I will find him, as he tells Jake to come along. Meanwhile, the man in black...
So what have you been doing this whole time?
Yeah.
Like, it took this kid showing up for you to have any agency, which is also a really lazy device.
After he killed your father. At some point, because who knows when that happened.
I am just so pained watching Idris Elba go through these lines with this kid. It's pretty sad. The man in black influences a little girl to hate her mom as he starts investigating the streets as well.
This also made me laugh. He just says hate, and her eyes turn like black with the ice cream cone. Oh my God. This movie also has unintentional moments of comedy that are so out of place. It's like me walking into a men's club trying to blend in at a straight bar. Like, it's never going to happen.
We're seeing all...
And he's walking around, like, with, like, McConaughey's wardrobe in this. He's just walking around with his shirt unbuttoned for most of it.
Yeah.
He's not even wearing, like, a cool black trench coat. He's got his hair all moosed up. He doesn't look like he came from another dimension.
No.
He looks like he came from freaking Hot Topic.
He looks like Skarsgård.
We're seeing all hail the Crimson King on the wall as he tells his minions about how someone used a portal without their knowledge. He's also told that his shine is pure and they've hit the jackpot, and the trouble starts and ends with the kid they had issues with the day before. Oh, the shine. If you're asking Adam, no, this does not come up in the books. This is brought in straight for this movie, and fuck it. I hate it.
So I enjoy sports to a certain level, right? But I'm not extremely emotional. And sometimes I feel empathy when somebody's football team is so shitty that they could possibly break a TV or coffee table, for example.
Ouch.
Like, what could drive them to that point? It's amazing that my remote control did not find its way through my TV when I started hearing about The Shine. And it's not dropped. The rest of this movie is about Jake and the goddamn shine.
Do the scene where they talk to each other telepathically. This movie hiked up its skirt for Stanley Kubrick. It just poured itself out.
We cut back to Jake and Roland as Jake sees the Tahin. They're camping out as Roland looks at ancient scriptures. Roland then talks about their final stand and that the war was about the tower.
Yeah. Okay. Who built this tower? Like, what is its purpose? We know it wards off demons. Like, there's no world building in this at all. And you need to, there's not even a fragment to explain. Like, this might as well just be, he crosses the border into Mexico and there's a tower that needs to.
That's the problem. This portal, I don't feel like I'm in a different world.
No, that's a great
even
point.
Even with these people here, like, I still don't feel like I'm in a different world. I'd rather be watching a different world.
I was going to say, you rather watch the Cosby spinoff?
Hit me Kadeem Harrison, please.
This is when Roland tells Jake to just eat his rabbit. Meanwhile, the man in black finds out Jake's name as he says to enjoy the show as they haven't seen anything yet. Roland then draws Jake a map to the Dark Tower, which is outside the darkness where demons can get to them. He tells Jake that there is no we, as every man who has followed him has suffered the same fate, and all that matters is for Roland to find and kill Walter. Meanwhile, we see another set of kids being strapped in, and Adam, this reminded me of the Dark Crystal. Remember when those little fucking...
Yep, it did to me as well.
Yeah.
Well, the template of this is those 80s fantasy movies with having like a real... A kid, like, you know, Labyrinth did that, Never Ending Story. But those movies had imagination. And these books are chock full of imagination. Like, you have a whole scene involving a train that you can't get off unless you stump it with a riddle. Like, you've got monsters that they deal with. You've got cycles of reincarnation. You've got a giant demon god that oversees everything. You've got a shape-shifting wizard. There's all kinds of really cool stuff in this. And none of that is here. That decrepit playground they're next to is more fun than anything in this movie. And I half expected to see a Pennywise logo on it, but this movie is so dark that you can't see anything during these campfire sequences. The Dark Tower doesn't need to be literal, you dipshits.
You know what, Matt? You brought up one of my summarizations of this movie is for a series that is so chock full of imagination. Say what you will about Stephen King and his writing. And we've definitely done that, and we're not going to stop doing that. But that series, I never really understood the love that that series got. But the more I've gotten into it, the more I have really enjoyed seeing his imagination unfold as I'm reading it. Especially this fourth one, which I'm really digging so far. It's like a tragic love story, basically, is what I'm reading. Roland says there is a bean quake as they hear screams, and then he says that whatever happens in one world echoes in the other.
That's when Adam heard the word shine.
Jake starts wandering off, and Roland has visions of the man in black. Jake has visions of his dad, who tells him that he got tall. No shit.
We all float down here.
He got tall because you guys did reshoots 3 months later. They say that they've missed each other as his dad says that they should go home. We hear darkness and fire as Roland comes out and saves him just in time. Roland then starts shooting at a vision of Walter right before warning Jake to look out for the people he loves because they may not be real, but only visions. Okay, I'm going to throw a compliment out here right now. I do like this scene. I like the shootout. This scene here works for me.
You know what? I'm going to say when Roland gets to be a gunslinger, I think it's pretty fun. Watching Idris with that revolver shooting, there's not a scene that I don't at least enjoy a little bit when he's doing that. It's fun that way, and I do think he's made to wear that duster to wield that revolver. So that stuff I can go.
Although, you know what I heard is the reason why they made his gun shiny like this?
To stand out?
Adam, you're going to probably throw your laptop when I tell you this.
Oh, no.
They wanted to appeal to the Asian crowd. And
they thought
by doing this, they would gravitate to this and really get into it.
You know what? Every single studio now capitulates to the Chinese market. I mean, Disney worst of all. So I can't be surprised.
I could not believe when I heard that.
I mean, Jesus. You know what? Fuck it. Let John Woo have this film.
Oh, my God. Instead, he's directing Joel Kinnaman in a fucking movie where he doesn't talk.
You know, we'd have more doves, but that's what it looks like. Dove
and a lot, and a lot more because Adam's crying. It would have been the Dove Tower, not the Dark Tower.
Boy, Matt's full of them today. Roland is in attack.
When you watch this bullshit,
you gotta find what you can.
We're getting to the good movies, guys. Roland is then attacked by a creature before it moves on to Jake. And Matt, you already said it, but it's in my notes as well. This is too fucking dark, man. What is going on here?
Yeah, they took this literally.
This is
I don't mind not seeing the monsters fully, but I at least want to see if the bullets are hitting anything.
Yeah.
They're just ricochet. It looks like they're just being absorbed into jello that Bill Cosby put in front of you in the late 80s.
Speaking of a different world. So Roland then ends up shooting the creature down. He tells Jake that he heals fast, and it was brave of Jake to try and help. Meanwhile, the man in black visits Jake's parents, as Jake's mom recognizes him from Jake's drawing. So I guess his drawings are that good that he recognizes.
Well, yeah, if you look at the drawing, he drew Bacade's license pretty well.
He asks to show him, and we're having ghosts and visions all over the place as the man in black says, well, I guess I have myself a stalker, and then fixates on a drawing of the gunslinger.
That's funny to hear McConaughey say that, because I'm sure he's someone who was stalked by a lot of women.
I'm sure he was. He tells her that her son is quite special, and that she must feel guilty for not believing in him, and then he shames her.
Even though she did?
Yeah. Meanwhile, Roland and Jake, they take off as they find some people who can help them with Jake's visions.
Now we got the freaking, what's that cult from? It's the people from The Road Warrior.
Oh, yeah.
Or it's the kids from Thunderdome. God damn, this is a lot of, there's a lot of Mad Max in this, except there's no creativity.
The man in black tells his people about Jake and that Jake is with Roland, who actually can resist the man in black's magic. Roland gets nursed back to health, and Jake is told about the shine, and that the shine is so bright on Jake, and right now Adam is throwing shit.
Yeah.
I can't believe we're going to double down on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I also don't like that they're setting, he's like an Anakin Skywalker level of a prodigy. The forces, his midichlorian count must be like the highest they've ever seen, but I don't get, there's nothing he does in this movie that's really that special or that heroic, because he's the one who needs to be rescued at the end. See, so you don't even fulfill the fantasy of like the kid being the one that does everything, because he's the damsel in the third act, even though the movie is about him.
Is there something special about Earth or Midworld? Because they sure as hell look like Earthlings that they keep, you know, extracting whatever beams from throughout the rest of the film. Did they all come from Earth just in different spots? No, they're all supposed to come from different worlds, right? We never see any of those worlds.
But no, they and all everybody's look humanoid like... except for the rat monsters.
Yeah, Jackie Earle Haley's got to look like he does.
Okay, that was also weird, him showing up.
It's weird when Jackie Earle Haley shows up anywhere. And when you see just how much Idris just dwarfs him, like you're like, how did this fucking guy end up being Freddy?
Yeah, and I'm like, okay, in what there is no world or dimension where I can believably believe he can hold his own in a fight against him.
Exactly. She tells Jake to share his visions with her, which he does, and she tells Roland that the Man in Black is in the Wastelands, which, by the way, is the title of the third book. Jake then tells them about the fake skins, and he asks to be sent to Keystone Earth. They eat, and the gunslinger asks Jake if they have guns in this world.
I remember this from the trailer, and I gotta say, it was funny then, and it made me laugh now.
They're told that the Man in Black is consumed with vengeance, but Roland says that the war is over and they lost as darkness is everywhere.
Why is he getting revenge then?
I don't know.
They don't explain any of this.
No. It's all given in just lazily done exposition.
They also never say he's serving another master, which is a big part of the book.
Uh-huh.
In this, he's the end-all be-all. But he's so powerful, but he can't bring this tower down without a kid's help. Like yeah, the power levels in this movie are like, it's a Dragon Ball Z level of illogical. You got some people who can do everything and resist magic to a level no one else can. Then you got others who should be all powerful, but they're these little things they can't do.
Roland says as long as the darkness is out there, the tower will fall. But before that happens, Roland needs to get his revenge.
Isn't the darkness what they call the never-ending story? Like
the nothing.
Yes.
No, it was the nothing.
It's the nothing.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, good, because this whole movie is a big box of nothing.
Well, you know what? Darkness is a legend.
They prepare the portal for Jake and Roland, who tells Jake that he's A-OK. They're attacked and start losing power as the Man in Black appears. Roland tells Jake to hide as the village is attacked. Get ready, boys. God,
they had no money to shoot this.
Are you ready for this?
I don't know if I am. I don't even remember what happens, because I was like... having my own psychic episodes, trying to will the fast forward button on my remote to get through this.
Stay quiet, Matt. I want to hear how Adam responds to this. So here we go. The Man in Black then talks about how Roland's weapons were forged from the metal of Excalibur. Yes, I just said that.
Christ.
You know what's weird about this is it's a really interesting reveal in the book. Like, the way it's drawn out in the book is actually pretty great. But again, they want to get as much of this out there as they can. So they're just throwing it out there just to throw it out there.
No, I got no problem with the idea of it. Uh-huh. In a better movie, because I do not want a longer version of this one, then I think there's something really cool to explore there.
Yeah.
But as it stands in this one, who gives a shit?
Yeah, because the gunslingers in the book are basically like Arthurian knights.
Yep.
Like, they have an order, they have a code.
But I don't see his guns do anything magical in this one. He seems to have a power, but
Well, I was just annoyed that they cut corners on everything else, but they specifically put that line in. And I also don't like that this movie, there's nothing special about the gunslingers, because as we can see, if you give a mortal the gun, they can use it no problem.
Roland is then attacked as he reloads his guns and shoots. Jake feels alone as the Man in Black tells Roland he couldn't save him. They grab the boy as Roland is down. Roland then gets up, aims his gun, and takes out a creature, saving Jake in the process. Again, the damsel in distress, right, Matt? You just called us out.
This is help, Leon, for the rest of the movie.
Jake is warned against using the shine, as it can be tracked.
Then why did you have him do it in the first place?
I hate because this.
That drew them to your hideout, you fucking morons.
I hate this so much. Oh my God. At this point, Matt, I'm doing exactly what you say you've done in the past. I just thrown up my arms. I said, okay, movie, you got me. They then start making their way through a restaurant. We then have the old fish out of water story as...
this is right out of Thor.
Yes. I'm going to say something. I like this stuff. I like the way Idris is playing this stuff. I find this shit pretty funny.
I think it's some of the better part of the movie.
Yeah.
It's enjoyable. like this fits here, but the rest of the movie is okay. Look, I had a decent piece of cheese on the shit burger that is this movie.
Oh yeah, these scenes are the ultimate personification of, other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how is the play?
Yeah.
I think it's amusing, but it's not original.
Agreed.
It's not really that, you know, unique. I like his reactions and stuff, but again, I'm freaking thinking of Masters of the Universe watching this, because it looks like it was made for the same amount of money. The thing. I wanted McConaughey to go full Frank Langella and just commit to it completely, and he doesn't. Like, we don't get a maniacal laugh or fucking anything.
This shall be our finest battle.
We see a raccoon commercial as Roland asks if the animals speak here, too.
Which is a reference to... it's supposed to be Oi, the character Oi.
Oi, yeah, from the next set of books. He appears in the third volume. I love that character, actually. So Roland is then interrogated by nurses as Jake helps him answer the questions. And then he says that he just can't stay. Go ahead.
Sorry, this is like a 90-second scene of him like getting in, and then they walk out of the hot. It has no purpose, but this movie's barely meeting required length, so I guess you can't cut it. There is like no purpose of this whatsoever.
Yeah, and they put up no fight to keep him in the hospital. He just gets up and leaves.
They get on a bus as Jake shares a sugar-filled Coke with him because the gunslinger likes sugar. Jake then takes Roland to the homeless guy from earlier who recognizes Roland, and he's not bound to show any clues as the man in black says he left a surprise for Jake. We cut to Timmy, remember him, who's wondering who Roland is. They go inside and find that Jake's parents are not there, and Roland discourages Jake from using the shine, therefore giving his location, which is exactly what the man in black wants.
Yeah, I forbid you from using the word the shine.
He says he needs to let go as he carries Jake out. Jake answers the logic of his mom dying so Roland can have his revenge, and he finds the location of the Dixie. Roland then gives Jake a gun, which is a huge part of the stories. And, you know, it's, again, with all the shootings going on around the time this movie was coming out, it's at one point in the script, they were going to have Jake be sacrificed by the gunslinger actually shooting him.
In a movie this spineless, there's no way they would have done that.
No, I would have respected it if it did that. But at this point, they were not going to have an African-American gentleman shoot a white kid in the face.
Right? So you put it like that, there's no chance.
No.
But I want to see them team up and be partners and be Sundance and Butch. And I would actually like that, but I don't believe these two together. And because they're playing Idris still so stilted, I don't believe it will. But I'd like to see these two team up, go off to have more adventures. Not from this film, but I would like to see these characters do that.
Just read the books.
I was about ready to say that exact same thing. Read the books because they get some good adventures there. Matt, remember the Lobstrosities? I thought maybe we were going to get those in here. We don't get those. Remember them from the
second? No, we don't really get beyond. We don't even see what the rat people look like without the faces.
No.
No.
Because they didn't have the money to do the makeup. You get the one guy who's like working in the central processing lab. But aside from that, everyone's wearing normal.
Yeah, you get like one profile shot, half dark, and that's it.
The second book opens. I'm just going to go ahead and go into this. Where Roland wakes up on a beach, okay, and he's surrounded by these Lobstrosities, which are these big lobster creatures that talk, but they are also deadly, and they basically cut off Roland's trigger fingers. So you have taken away the power of the gunslinger, which is his shooting fingers. And he goes through the entire book like that. And I would have respected this movie, again, if it would have gone through lengths like that. That is just a hell of a way to open that book. And that drawing of the three is a hell of a read. I just could not believe they didn't do any of that here.
I guess I can't, because by this point, there's no... I'm not expecting an ounce of imagination.
They start practicing their shooting, as they also talk about killing with their heart. They then go in a gun store, a scene I remember from the second book. He takes the ammo as the man in black appears again. He asks Roland if he missed him as he finally found the compass.
It's just what you see.
He tells Roland he's like a dog fetching his dick over and over as he's come to find the tower and kill the man in black over and over again. He then says that death always wins, and he finds himself outside the Dixie as the man in black finally finds Jake. He takes him away, saying Tall, Dark, and Handsome are about to crash the party. Matt, I'm sorry, man. I think they go way too far with these lines. McConaughey is playing this just like he did in fucking 1994.
I don't think it's that far because he's not yelling.
Oh, these are terrible lines. We see Roland taking out some guards as Jake has visions of the tower. Roland says he's coming for him as he barrels his way in. Roland then takes out a ton of guards as the man in black walks by, Jake in hand, and says that they have a great apocalypse on their hands. They strap Jake in and turn on the power. Roland senses this and again turns on the fire. Some pretty standard action here, but I don't know. I was kind of liking this. Adam, are you still saying that when they allow Idris to be the gunslinger, he's okay?
Look, at this point, you got, you know, you get close up of faces, and then I guess an hour and 15 minutes in, you get Stuntman to do some cool shit. Yeah, it looks pretty, it looks all right. It looks all right, all right, all right. But it's given me a little something for 5 minutes.
Yeah,
that I could be like, hey, this is fun. But yeah, I do like when he's shooting, doing, but it's the trailer shots. It's him doing cool shit to reload the, you know, the weapon and stuff. It's hit triangle to reload your gun. It looks cool. It's fun. It's a different experience of what I would expect from this kind of movie. A couple licks on this Tootsie Pop, and that's all it's given me.
Yeah, I needed an owl to come in and break this movie down like that Tootsie Pop.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, this gunplay is fine, but there it's not... He doesn't do any special like gunplay or trick shots, stuff that really makes him stand out beyond just like a typical action hero. So that's one, also another one of his points. There's no creativity with the gunplay. Like, I kind of wish John Woo did this.
It's standard stuff.
It's like, again, you're going to...
I'm not the one to bitch about this, but I hate that this is PG-13.
Oh, God. Well, there's
it barely feels PG-13. I mean, this is... you got to stretch for the 13 in this. This is
13 is how many tries it took to get through this.
I mean, this is a PG movie.
And as I mentioned at the beginning of this podcast, this is an adult fantasy series. So you are dumbing it down by making it PG-13, barely that, as Adam says, and you're making it young adult. That is the wrong impulse. So Roland throws down a gas can and shoots it as Jake starts resisting.
Oh, this is, you know what this is? This is the ending of the first X-Men movie when Rogue is in the Statue of Liberty,
yep,
tied up, yep, being harnessed. Like, that's literally what this fucking is. Yep. And it was probably made for the same amount of money.
Yeah. The man in black asks why he's fighting back as Roland is attacked again and is thrown off the bus. And then we have this guy just flying over a car and into Roland's shot. Okay. Like, oh my God. Jake keeps the portal open as Roland and the man in black have their confrontation. Magic and gunfire meet as the man in black says it's fitting that you and the tower should fall together. Roland then takes a hit as the man in black carries some fire in his hand. God, did I hate that. Jake is hearing voices and that he killed with his heart as the gunslinger ricochets a bullet right into the man in black.
Yeah, he kills him with one bullet.
A ricocheted bullet.
Well, he shoots with his heart, not with his hand.
This is the equivalent of blowing up the Death Star with the little trench. That's what this is. Oh my God, I hate this so much.
I do too.
You know what though? You know the best part about this? You know who Roland saved? My Jake!
He rescues the boy as the man in black falls and the portal is shut and the tower stays intact. We didn't see Roland and Jake walking the dust-drenched streets as reporting on the events is taking place. And then Jake introduces Roland to a whole new breed of hot dog as Roland says he has to leave.
Soubrettes aren't even the best kind of hot dog you get in New York. I'm sorry.
He asks Jake to come with him as he has nothing here and he could use the help. He calls Jake Gunslinger, which Jake so didn't earn, as they walk to the portal and take off and credits roll on the longest 95 minutes of my fucking life. Adam, how'd you feel about how this ended?
Yeah, it great. I guess I had one more sweet tart left to pop in my mouth because it ends on, you know, so saccharine that Matt could have done a sweet joke out of that. Hey, okay. I wish it was better that I could enjoy these two finishing off and look forward to a next adventure.
Phrasing. You know,
but okay. I mean, hey, look, you go to New York, you got to get a street dog. Take your wieners where you can get them.
Well, if you go down a lot of New York alleys, you certainly can.
Matt, you just glad it was over?
Oh, God, I sprinted out of that theater like I was the Flash. I didn't want to spend any more time, and I was only in there for not even 90 minutes. But it's the whole thing of like, well, we got no other way to end this, so just come with me. That's what she's like.
Come with me if you want to live.
He has no other family that he can live with.
Would you like to come with me or be a homeless 15-year-old in New York City?
And okay, what about all the other kids who come back? They have nowhere to go. So I think Roland is doing the Batman thing of building up a child army.
All right, scale of 1 to 10. Boy, what a discussion. What do we give The Dark Tower? Adam, unleash, sir.
All right, I look forward to these Stephen King retrospectives editions every time. Okay, the first time I saw this, look, it was non-painful. It wasn't insulting. It was just a little nothing of a movie. Well, you know what? Now I've learned some of King's work. I've watched more of the other stuff. And yeah, this is actually insulting. I think if you've read King, if you enjoy King, and if you're looking for this adaptation, I do think it's an insult to those that have read it and those that have who have really deserved to have the gunslinger and the man in black brought to screen. Look, this is a bad story with bad pacing, bad direction, a waste of 90 minutes, and a waste of some of the best casting you could have possibly done. God damn. Like, I'm sorry, but people deserve to lose their jobs over this. A studio deserves to barely stick around after something like this. It's an utter waste. Watch the trailer, and that's it. And then I guess go read the books. But avoid this movie. Just avoid it with all that you can. It doesn't feel like a Stephen King book. It doesn't feel like high fantasy. It doesn't feel like a well-told young adult story. I mean, god dang, this thing is, it was hamstrung from the beginning. It's hamstrung throughout. Man, let the tower fall, because I know, just no. Classic 4 on 10, just bad.
Wow, it's really bad, but you're going with a 4, huh?
I'm going with a 4. Look, there's
you gave Hulk a 3.
Yes, I did.
So this is better than that.
This is 95 minutes.
Fair enough.
You add 45 minutes onto this movie and it will drop another number.
All right. Fair enough. All right. Classic 4 on 10 from Mr. Bunch. Goudreau, how do you feel, sir?
This movie is so bad. I wanted to watch this tower get hit by some Muslim hijackers just so I could watch it collapse and get out of here. Oh, my God. The first time I saw this, it was bad and I did not give it a positive review. I found this one to be interminable watching it on my couch. And it's the worst example of adaptation where there's no substance and there's what love might have been there does not translate to screen. And it's also antithetical to the book. Like, they switched perspectives on the character, who's the focal point. There's no detail or any of the defining aspects beyond just names. And look, if I was a bigger fan, I'd probably be more offended than I am, which is to say I'm not would be a false statement. I think this is not just the worst example of adaptation. This is the worst example of like Hollywood studio think, where we slap on a name. If we have fragments that resemble what we're adapting, that'll get us some brownie points. But no, you have to earn what you're adapting. You have to show the labor of doing your research and all of that. Not to say that you need to be slavish. You certainly don't. You can make changes. But when you're this basically kicking dirt on something that a lot of people love just to make a quick buck, I can't endorse it. And I think what makes it worse is you had the two people that I think could have carried this as the big franchise that it should have been, but they're not supported by anything. They're jumping out of a plane without a parachute for this movie, and it's 95 minutes of hot garbage. I can't. I wish I could give it a 4. I can't. This is the lowest 3 I can possibly give, because I do think Idris Elba is trying his best, and even he can't salvage this. So it's a 3. It's awful, and I'm never going to watch it again.
Believe it or not, guys, I was actually looking forward to revisiting this. The reason being is I have really gotten into The Dark Towers since we started going through these movies, and I've been reading these books. Once I get to a Dark Tower book, I look forward to that read. I've been enjoying my journey through Midworld, and the movie starts, and I will say I will half agree with Adam in that I think they wasted a great bit of casting. I think Idris Elba is completely wasted in this, and we've said that 100 times on this podcast. We'll probably say it 100 more. I don't like the McConaughey casting in this. I think he is going for the cheese, and it doesn't work with this character. I think the man in black needs to be imposing. I think the man in black needs to be formidable. He is here with force powers, with Sith powers that make no sense when it comes to this character. He leads with his mind. The Jake character, completely wasted. Everything about this. It's the classic example of executives sitting in a room, having notes on the books, writing little notes on things and throwing it on the board to see if it sticks. I have never seen a movie where every single fucking decision was the wrong one. it's uncanny to me. There are a couple good sequences. I like the Idris Elba casting, and for that, I have the same score as Matt written down. I have a 3. This is pretty terrible. But all that being said, I do look forward to seeing King's Vision as I go through the books. And if you stay through the end credits, Adam will tell you how to follow my journey on that. But yeah, this is a 3/10. Just not good. Boys, if there's one thing I can guarantee, it's that next week we're going to get better. Next week, we are going 2 different seasons, starting off with The Shawshank Redemption, a movie nominated for a ton of awards, didn't make too much money, but it gave King a lot of credibility, and it put Frank Darabont on the respected map. Lots to discuss when it comes to Shawshank Redemption next week, and I will go ahead and say, well, I'll say what I'm going to say for my 2 colleagues to go. Matt, what are you expecting when we talk about Shawshank Redemption next week?
Well, I feel like it's not a movie that I need to hype up too much because it's one of the few King properties that I think everyone has seen. It's probably one of the most accessible because it's not horror whatsoever. But I'm curious to go back and watch it because you talked about how you like it, but it's not something you have a huge affinity for. And I'm pretty much in the same boat, but I'm curious to see if now that I'm older, if it'll have a longer or more substantial impact on me.
Now, Adam, thank you for not saving your first viewing of this until we actually review the damn film. You wasted it last year, but you're going to be watching this thing for the second time. What are you feeling going into next week's Shawshank Redemption review?
This way I can actually be analytical about it as opposed to just sitting there and watching it.
Okay.
I'm looking forward to it. I wonder if some of the stuff will stick around, if I'll be surprised by some of the situations, if the acting will still be there, if the writing. I do think Matt's right that I think for a lot of people, this and maybe The Green Mile might be King's most accessible work that's not in the horror genre. So, yeah, this is one that I've been really looking forward to us three discussing because I think it's the first time that we take King off in a different direction.
And that'll be next week. And you know what? As far as The Dark Tower goes, boys, there were rumors that Mike Flanagan had written a script for a Dark Tower series. That never got made. Matt, I don't see Dark Tower coming back in our lifetime. What about you?
Never say never.
Really?
But especially with Flanagan. That man is churning out King adaptations like King crapped out books for a portion of his career. So if anybody could do it, it'd probably be him because he certainly would have the most clout of anyone to do it. If he so chose.
Adam, if they bring back this property proper, would you actually look forward to seeing how someone else, like Flanagan, could interpret it?
I would. I'd at least be there for get some of my King curiousness out there. You know what? Depending on who's got the rights, I could see Amazon tying in a TV series with then a film release, being that Amazon with MGM is now starting to really bump up their film game. So there's been always that long-term rumor of, a season of TV and then a movie. Season of TV and then a movie. Maybe that's the property to do it. But I do think Mike Flanagan writes a script for every King novel that's ever been written and presents them when he needs another check.
I'm going to be really curious to see a Carrie trailer. I just don't know where you could go with that property, but he swears.
Did that movie actually happen?
Yeah, it's an Amazon series. He is doing it, and it is completed. Heather Graham was just at a WizardCon just a couple weeks ago discussing it. So we'll talk about Shawshank next week. Boys, thank you for going through this journey to Midworld with me. I appreciate it. Until next week, when we get to different seasons, Shawshank Redemption. I do not podcast with my gun. I podcast with my heart. Thank you, boys.
Your visions didn't bring you to him. They brought you to me. He doesn't love you. He doesn't care for you. In fact, he's been using you this entire time to get to me. This is why you're here. This is your destiny.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Three Men in a Retrospective podcast, exclusively here on Percolated Media.
Gunslinger, did you miss me?
Come back every Friday as new retrospective reviews are posted weekly on your favorite podcast platform of choice.
Fire away.
If you like this retrospective review, check out our archives at percolatedmedia.net, as we have tons of franchise reviews such as the Alien film series, Star Wars, Indiana Jones, the ongoing Marvel films, the Mission Impossible film series, the Jaws franchise, the Lethal Weapon films, the John Wick franchise, the Jurassic Park and Jurassic World film series, the Mad Max film series, Avatar, the Megan films, the Beetlejuice films, the Exorcist films, the Predator films, the Black Phone films, and so much more.
First, you want to save the tower. Then you want to kill the man in black. You are like a dog fetching a stick over and over.
If you would like to follow Garrett as he reads and reviews Stephen King's books in publication order, find and friend his profile on the Goodreads app.
You're going to need help.
A 3 Men in a Retrospective podcast is produced by Garrett and Matt.
It's good to see you, man. You got tall.
The 3 Men and a Retrospective podcast is edited by Garrett.
Your shine is your weapon, Jake.
Scheduling done by Matt.
So you wanted me to face you, old friend?
The 3 Men and a Retrospective podcast is voice narrated by Adam.
Here I am.
The 3 Men in a Retrospective podcast is an independently produced podcast, and it's thanks to the support of listeners like you that help keep it that way. Please like and subscribe, as well as leave a review on your favorite podcast platform of choice.
That was a big one.
This podcast is not affiliated with any film studio or network, and all opinions expressed on the 3 Men in a Retrospective podcast represents the opinions of that individual. Any similarities to any and all things associated with the films in question are strictly coincidental.
That's pretty intense.
Yeah.
This podcast is a Percolated Media production. Copyright 2026, and any and all music, movie, and sound clips are used for entertainment purposes and review only.
So when's the apocalypse coming?
Come on, man, just give me my book.
You have nothing to be afraid of, my friend. Death is not far away. You want to know what's on the other side? Can you see it? Of course you can't. Because nothing is there. It's all a lie.
Until next time, old friend.
Boy, you guys ready to discuss this masterpiece?
I got Hellraiser 2 playing in the background talking about a masterpiece. God damn, these movies are weird.
Hellraiser. I got plenty of stuff to say, though.
Hellraiser 2? All right. Goudreau, count me down. Let's get going.
And Fubo.
Well, yeah, he was offered the 2020 miniseries. Yep. He turned it down. I wonder if because of this. Because we were still in the... This was still the McConaughey. He had really shown, like, taking daring projects and great performance after great performance. And this was, I think, to get the fans on board. It was almost like they pitched to McConaughey. It's like, we need you to get people to buy into this, that it's actually going to be good. Which you could not have said about Matthew McConaughey 10, 15 years ago.
No.
When he was cast, people were like, oh, God, it's going to suck.
That's true. He made all those goddamn romantic comedies back in the aughts.
Yeah, but that's like, you know, that's what paid the bills.
Yeah.
You know, because Sahara bombed. I think that was his, like, after that, he was like, never again.
Fool's Gold, which I reviewed for my college newspaper. God, that was pretty bad. Man, what a terrible movie that was. All right, Adam, Matthew McConaughey.
He did a movie about being a DJ. Why? Because he DJs. He goes out on the weekend and actually DJs EDM because he loves the music. So he made a movie about it because he wanted to.
Idris Elba had been talked about as being Batman for a long time.
Yep. And Bond.
And Bond, obviously. Yep. Yeah.
But like, this is like fan casting. If Idris Elba was Batman and Matthew McConaughey was the Joker, people would flock to go see that movie.
I agree. And we're going to see him as Man in Arms later on this year.
Why? Because he liked He-Man as a kid. Yep,
exactly.
And that's why he did it. There's something fucking great about that.
It's funny you say that, because I'm dreading the version of this where Jared Leto was the Man in Black.
Oh, God.
Tell me, like, because Jared Leto got as much out of Death by his club as he did.
So... Yeah, So the castings are announced, and people...
And to Matt's point, when it came finally time to see it, I took a long nap and missed the time that it had spent in the theaters that weekend.
Adam, what was it that Stuttering John asked Billy Crystal? What was it like when Mr. Saturday Night closed Saturday afternoon? That's always what I think of when I see movies leave theaters this quick.
This thing had the longevity back then that The Bride had this year.
They pull the rug multiple times in the first 2-3 minutes, and right away I'm like, okay, this is not in good hands. Which is unfortunate, because we have an Allstate person in this movie. And because if you're a fan, you're not in good hands.
Very well done, sir. I literally needed,
I was awesome. My lip to find a way to put that in. I had it in my notes, and that was just the perfect way to insert it.
Very well done. Holy shit. We see another kid named Jake. Jake mentions the Men in Black.
That's what I'd prefer to be discussing here.
Jake mentions the Man in Black as we see a raccoon commercial as Roland asks if the animals speak here too,
which is a reference to.
Oh, you mean we don't get to see it in this movie that has multiple worlds? Shocker. I'd rather be watching Shocker.
Oh, my God.
I'm not going that far. No.
I'd rather be given the Shocker than watching the rest of this.
Do you think of it at Matt? Or...
Oh, it's supposed to be Oi, from the character Oi?
Oi, yeah, from the next set of books. He appears in the third volume, actually.